You're listening to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com today.
All right, and welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solly, a senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at JSolly. Normally, we've got a full season-long discussion, plus DFS with Arthur Arkish and JC Talon, but I'm riding solo today, and we're just talking daily fantasy sports, because we've got a wonderful guest on today who is gracious enough to hop on with us. Our guest today is Evan Silva. Evan is the senior football editor for RotoWorld, the co-host of the RotoWorld FanDuel NFL podcast with Adam Levitan. It's a great listen if you're a FanDuel player or just interested in more fantasy football content. You can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan Silva and read his work at RotoWorld.com. Evan, thanks for coming on the Chicago Football Podcast.
John, what's up, man? I'm excited to spit some hot fire about DFS here.
Hey, I'm all over it. All right. Words I never, ever thought I would say to start a fantasy football podcast, but let's start with Geno Smith. The Jets have had the butt fumble. I saw somewhere on Twitter someone called this the LOL what rumble. Geno is, of course, out 6 to 10 weeks with a broken jaw after getting sucker punched. But the Jets opened with Cleveland in week one. On FanDuel, Geno Smith was going for 6,800, and Ryan Fitzpatrick is in the same price. It's like FanDuel had no faith in Geno whatsoever. Is Fitzmagic a play in week one?
No.
Good answer.
I'm not ruling him out from being a good play at any point, but the Browns had one of the best pass Ds in the NFL last year, and they're going to be good again. I mean, they've got Joe Hayden. They've got some of the best safeties in the league, Tayshaun Gibson and Dante Whitner, and they went out and signed Tremont Williams away from the Packers. He should be a solid starter for them. So the issue is less to do with Ryan Fitzpatrick and his overall outlook. I actually think he's a guy who could be underrated over the course of the season. If you remember in Buffalo, he definitely had some moments with Chan Gailey, who of course is his offensive coordinator again. So I think that he could, they've got some weapons on the Jets now. I mean, they've got Brandon Marshall. Eric Decker was banged up a lot last year, but he's been healthy throughout camp. They got Devin Smith, who should be back early in the season. He broke his collarbone like on the first day of training camp, but he should be back pretty soon. He was a high second-round pick. And they've got Jeremy Curley, who has always been a reliable slot receiver. And they've also got Jason Morrow, who led all rookie tight ends in production last season. So they've got some weapons. And in weeks two and three, the Jets play the Colts, which could be a shootout-type game. And then in week three, they play Atlanta, which doesn't have a lot of talent on defense. So I do think that Ryan Fitzpatrick could have some could be an appealing low-priced quarterback play early in the year. In week one, I'm avoiding him. I'm also kind of rooting for him to have a bad game so that his price will go down, and you know we can use him against Indy and Atlanta at a cheaper cost.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I think Fitzpatrick could maybe fall down to 6,400 by the time week two, week three hits. And like you said, some great matchups in weeks two and three. We'll move on to some general sort of daily fantasy sports questions. For those of you that have listened before, our admission statement when it comes to DFS is to kind of make it a less scary place, especially for first-timers or people transitioning from season-long. So, Evan, I don't want you to give away your whole secret sauce, your whole process here, but what positions do you typically start a DFS lineup with?
Well, what I really like to do is to start my lineup with a minimum price wide receiver. A guy who I know is going to be out there on the field, a guy who I feel will get 6 to 9 targets. And of course, if I project him for more than 9 targets, that's obviously great too. But I'm looking in that range. You know, this is something that worked out for me last year with Terrence Williams. Everybody had given up on him late in the season. I knew he'd be out there. He was min price against the Colts, and he had 2 touchdowns, and that was huge. For the min price wide receivers to return their value in terms of how much they cost and how many points you're looking for, all you need is for them to catch 4 passes for 55 yards. So it's not, you know, the bar is not too high. Now, this can sometimes backfire. I did the same thing with Jermaine Kearse at times last year, and he had, you know, two catches for 21 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But even when that happens, the reason that you're doing that is to be able to put in, you know, Gronk or two stud wide receivers, or to be able to afford Eddie Lacy in a great matchup, or to be able to afford Jeremy Hill against the Raiders, or DeMarco Murray against Atlanta. And there are two guys that I've been looking at. Eddie Royal, especially if Kevin White isn't ready for week one, Eddie Royal is just above min price against the Packers. That's a game where Jay Cutler may end up throwing a lot. And I think that Eddie Royal, at least to begin the season, will probably be an every down player in the Bears offense. I'm also looking at Stevie Johnson, who costs $4,700, which again is just above minimum price on FanDuel. He's playing Detroit. That's a team that has really good run defense. I know they lost Sue, but they do have Haloti Ngata now, and they bring back DeAndre Levy. They get back Steven Tulloch, Ziggy Ansah. I mean, they've got a bunch of really good run defenders. They're going to be a good run defending team. And, you know, I think that Phillip Rivers ends up throwing 35 passes in that game. So I like Stevie Johnson. I'd probably project him for like 8 targets. And it wouldn't surprise me if he got 13. And then Eddie Royal, I'd probably project him for maybe 8.5 or 9 targets. And it wouldn't, you know, if that game gets out of hand and the Packers are smoking the Bears, it wouldn't surprise me if Eddie Royal got 12 targets.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either. I really like the Eddie Royal play, especially in week one. And I look at Eddie Royal as a whole for the season, maybe in DFS. He might be a little underpriced throughout mm-hmm. the year. And the Bears gave him, I think, guaranteed him $10 million
they did.
In his contract. That tells me, and I mentioned this in our podcast last week, that Eddie Royal is going to be a big part of this offense this year.
Yeah, man, three-year deal, $15 million, $10 million guaranteed. He had a really good season in San Diego last year, and he wasn't a full-time player in San Diego, but he caught over 60 balls. He had 70 touchdowns. In terms of the number of targets he got like 91 targets, caught 62 of them, which is a pretty good catch rate. I mean, he's a good player, you know, and the Bears like him. Adam Gase has a history with him. Jay Cutler has a history with him. So I agree with you. I think he's pretty much undervalued in all forms of fantasy.
Definitely. Moving on to some more general DFS questions. How much do you pay attention to Vegas lines as they come out in building your lineup?
Oh, it's the starting point. It's the first thing that you look at. You know, you pull up the Vegas lines. You look at Philadelphia against Atlanta. You know, it's got a 54-point over-under. And that's a game that you're like, I want to have shares of players in a game like that. Now, early in the season, we're all kind of just working off of – we're all doing guesswork, including Vegas, and Vegas just gets more accurate with their over-unders and all that, those sorts of things over the course of the season. So there will definitely be some wild games in week one. Like I remember last year, the friggin' Titans went to Arrowhead and beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead.
Remember that?
I can't even. I mean, I still think about that like all the time, and I'm like, I can't believe that happened. But wild things happen in week one. But you still want to definitely look at those Vegas lines and definitely use them as a critical data point for where to target players. Like in that game that I just mentioned, Atlanta-Philly. It's got the highest over-under of week one. I believe I haven't looked at the over-unders in a couple days. But last time I checked, it did. And Jordan Matthews is only 6,000 on FanDuel. He should be priced like a wide receiver one. And he's priced like a high-end wide receiver three. So that's a major value opportunity. You know, the Eagles led the NFL in offensive plays last year. I expect Bradford to be an upgrade on Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles. Loving Jordan Matthews at that price.
One more Vegas question. How about the player props that come out usually Sunday mornings? How much do you pay attention to that?
Well, I have actually listened to podcasts that the actual Vegas insiders have gone on, and the player props, like, they don't make any money off the player props. That's just to get people kind of in the fold. And they don't feel like they have great player props. So, you know, I don't know if we should use those as something, you know, as a decision-making tool, because I don't even think that the people that make them think that they are particularly great. Now, are they better props than you or I could make? Probably, but, you know, I don't know if that's a great decision-making tool. I like the Vegas over-unders better.
Interesting. That was a big mistake I made last year. I was waiting until Sunday morning for props to come out and going off of that and making too many tweaks off of it, and I ended up on the losing end on too many items. So that's good information.
That's right. I mean, I did that during baseball season some as well. I would look at, like, the strikeout props for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, you know. It's just I would lean more on the over-unders.
Okay. Are you playing more cash games or tournaments in a typical week?
Probably more cash games at this point. I started out as a tournament player, but, you know, when you're a tournament player, man, you can go 5 weeks without making anything. And, I mean, it's just, you know, and then maybe you'll have a 3-week run where you roll. But I don't like, because the season's only 17 weeks, like, I don't want to go on 3-week, you know, get goose eggs for 3 weeks. Like, I can't take it, man. So
it's a great way to tear your hair out.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cash games, you know, your win percentage is a lot higher, and you can also really rake in some money if you have big weeks with your cash game lineup. I mean, it's almost like winning a tournament if you play enough cash games and you put enough into those. So I'll probably be like 60-70% cash games and 30-40% tournaments this year.
Okay. What's the biggest difference typically between your cash game lineup and your tournament lineup?
Totally looking for volume with my cash game lineup. Guys who I feel very comfortable about their roles, you know, guys who get goal line carries. I'm willing to pay up for a quarterback. I'm willing to pay up for Aaron Rodgers in cash games. You know, I'm going for safety, and I'm hoping that the people that I am competing against head-to-head or in the, you know, the 40-man, you know, $25 entry, little cash games, that they are making mistakes. I'm more just betting that other people are making suboptimal decisions, and I'm just trying to play it safe. In the GPPs, I do like to put safe guys in there. I mean, I definitely still love volume, but I'm willing to go a little bit off the, you know, off the radar with a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make my whole lineup contrarian, because that's just going to end up being suboptimal. But I definitely want to throw in a few contrarian guys who could go off, whether it be because people just aren't talking about those guys, or because they have what is perceived to be a difficult matchup. But I know that they're a great player and that they're going to get the ball a lot. So those are kind of my takes on how to build a cash game and a GPP lineup. And in both of those, you know, regardless, I'm willing to do, you know, use that strategy of using the min price wide receiver. I think it can really give you a big edge, or a solid edge, if he just comes back and gets you those 4 catches for 55 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, if he goes Terrence Williams, you're really at an advantage.
Kind of going off of that and transitioning into the next topic I want to talk about, FanDuel's big week one NFL tournament, the Sunday $5 million, with all the value out there, and I think that will ultimately grow as we go through training camp and guys mm-hmm. are going to get hurt. Am I crazy to leave, say, $1,000 on the table in my salary cap just to get a unique lineup because that tournament is so large with 200,000-plus entries?
I think if you're playing in a GPP, and I'm just getting this information from actual DFS sharks who, you know, I've talked to about this, so I'm just relaying what they have told me.
That's why we have you on, man.
right. I mean, I'm not a DFS shark myself. Like, I'm definitely a player who ends up in the green, and I have my moments,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not, you know, busting 100 entries into a multi-entry tournament. You know what I mean? Like, I might have like 8.
Yeah,
and that would be
the folks who put out 100. That just seems crazy to me. I don't know how they do it.
I know. And same here. You know, I'm a human. I got a kid. Like I can't do.
I got stuff to do. I'm at the library.
Exactly. I can't remember what the question was.
Am I crazy to leave, you know, $1,000 on the table in the Sunday 5 million just to get a unique lineup, different from the field?
Yeah, you know, what the DFS Sharks would say is that if you're in a tournament and you are speaking of a tournament, a large field tournament, you should be more willing to leave money on the table. But if you're in a cash game, you don't want to leave very much money on the table because, you know, FanDuel and DraftKings themselves are using algorithms to project the players to begin with. So that's why they're priced where they are. They're using numbers that are trying to reflect the value of those players. And so that's a decent starting point in and of itself. And you don't want to leave a whole lot of money on the table in cash games because you're trying to be optimal. But then in GPPs, you should definitely have more flexibility with the salary cap.
All right. Who do you think will be the highest owned player in the Sunday Million on week one?
It's a good question.
I think it's going to be Jeremy Hill against the Raiders. I think his price is too good. His matchup is too good. I think it's an easy fit into a lineup.
I could see that. I could definitely see that. I'm trying to think. Julio Jones might be highly owned against Atlanta. Against Philadelphia. Joseph Randall could be really interesting.
He's my guy this year. I like him a lot.
His percentage owned, because he only got 6,900 on FanDuel, which is like an RB2, a low to mid RB2. And he's facing the Giants, who are going to be without JPP. And, you know, it's at home in Dallas.
Yep.
That could be a big game for Joseph Randall. I bet he's kind of highly owned. But, yeah, I would not take issue with your projection that Jeremy Hill will be the highest owned player in the big tourney.
Okay, that'll do it for Sunday Million stuff. About a week ago, you came out with your early camp top 200 on RotoWorld. Any major changes other than Arian Foster, obviously, at number 10 after his injury? Any major changes you would make to that a week later? Or are you planning on adjusting that as camp goes on here?
I'm in the process of doing that as we speak. I moved up Lamar Miller considerably. It's kind of dicey. Like, when you hear coach speak, you don't necessarily know whether it's real or if it's just, quote unquote coach speak. Mm-hmm. But the Dolphins, you know, one of my concerns with Lamar Miller has been that the Dolphins have not committed to him as like a big time bell cow back. Like, he didn't hit 20 carries in any of his games last season. But the Dolphins have like an open competition for the number two running back job. The guy that people were afraid of, Jay Ajayi, is currently injured and running as the number four. He's been outplayed by LaMichael James. Toward the end of last season, Lamar Miller actually had 19, 19, and 17 carries in the Dolphins' final three games. So it seemed like the Dolphins were warming up to him being more of a true foundation-type runner late last season. And now we hear Joe Philbin telling us that he would be willing to give Lamar Miller 300-plus carries. You know, it could just go down as coach speak, and maybe the Dolphins still see Lamar Miller as the lead part of a committee as opposed to a true workhorse. But either way, he's a good fantasy pick, and I'm moving him up from like the late third round into the late second round. So that's a pretty big jump. I like Lamar Miller. He does have a difficult schedule, though. Keep that in mind. The Patriots last year, just in the division, the Patriots last year were a top 10 run defense. No reason to think that they'll fall off sharply. He's got to face the Bills. Mm-hmm, and also the Jets, you know, so his schedule is definitely a concern.
Definitely. You can follow him on Twitter at Evan Silva. Our guest today has been RotoWorld football editor Evan Silva. Evan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, man.
That'll do it for our podcast today. Don't forget to get all of the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts and listen to our podcast each week. as we get you prepared for drafts and help you win throughout the season. We would also like to remind you that our podcast is available in iTunes, so please head over and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Heavy duty demands have met their match with the high strength steel Silverado HD. Drive what Dan Hampton drives and visit ChevyDrivesChicago.com today. Big thanks to Evan Silva for being a guest on today's show. Our producer today was Dan Mott. Our associate producer is Jason Frommer. I'm John Solly. For all of us at Chicago Football, we hope you have a great week, and we will catch you next time.